Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to the Bus and Rail Subcommittee meeting today on Monday, July 12th, 2021. To begin with, as you all know, this meeting is being recorded and the meeting audio will be placed on our website as we do for all the meetings. excuse me. Just a few helpful tips for people joining via phone call. You know that you can press star six to mute or unmute yourself. If you'd like to make comments, you can raise your virtual hands by pressing star nine, and star nine will also lower the virtual hands. Everyone on the video conference, you can click on the speaker icon to mute and unmute yourself. And if you go under reactions, you would see the raise hand icon. If you click on that once, it'll raise your hand, virtual hand. And if you click on it again, it'll lower your virtual hand. We have the ASL interpreters with us on this call. So I would request everyone who would like to make comments, please state your name first before making your comments. It helps them do their job well. It also helps everyone listening on the phone call knowing who is the speaker. People may listen to the audio afterwards. When it's placed on the website, it also helps them knowing who is the speaker at the time. So I thank you in advance for that. I would go ahead and read the agenda for today's meeting. And I would also share my screen so that it can be played. Excuse me, I'm also letting people in the meeting, so bear with me. I will share my screen so that everyone who can see, they are able to see the agenda. So bear with me for a quick moment. I'm hoping everyone can see my screen. Yes, okay, great. So we are going to go through the attendance of the AAC meeting after I finish reading the agenda. Afterwards, Chair Calabia will go through the motion of reviewing and approval of today's agenda and last month's meeting minutes. Afterwards, we have a wonderful team to give us information and have the discussion with the committee about bus validator device location. As you know that we had some of the members attend the testing session last week. At approximately 5:10, we have committee discussion about work plan recommendations for future discussions that would pertain to our meetings beginning in September, and committee will have an opportunity to share their topics of recommendations at that point. At 5:30, we will have the ombudsman report, 5:45 public comment section, if any, and at 6 p.m., we will have the meeting adjournment. I will stop sharing my screen at this time. Okay. Like I said, I would go ahead and take the attendance of the committee members today. So please confirm your attendance. Elver Ariza Silva. Johnny Spursh. Okay, thank you. Tino Calabia.
Present.
Thank you. Vanessa Coles.
Present.
Thank you. Rico Dancy. Rico is on the call with us. Deborah Fisher.
Present.
Thank you. Melanie Jackson Henderson. Steve Caffin emailed stating that he will not be able to join, so we have his email. Philippa Mazel.
Present.
Thank you. Anthony Oberg.
Present.
Thank you. Phil Posner.
Present.
Thank you. Doris Ray. Denise Rush. Ms. Rush is on the call with us. Paul Semaphore. Patrick Sheehan. Kelly Simonon. Kelly is continuing her maternity leave at this point. So thank you. That concludes the roll call roster for today's bus and rail subcommittee meeting. We do have presenters with us, as we have discussed it already. This is just for the records and a friendly reminder. Please describe the visual presentation.
This is Rico. Did you call my name? I'm here.
Yes, I did. And I did mark you present. Thank you, Rico. So just a friendly reminder. Thanks. Sure, you're welcome. For the presenters, as they are already aware, and this is more for the record, that they are going to describe their slides for the convenience of our members and members of the public who are blind or have low vision. So thank you in advance for that. Chair Calabia, at this point, I would ask for you to move the meeting forward. You have the floor.
Do I have a motion and a second for approving the agenda? Are there any objections to the agenda? Hearing none, we have an agenda. The next item was a review of last
Chair month. Calabia?
Yes.
Apologies for the interruption. I see Ms. Rush has her hand up.
Oh.
Ms. Rush, do you have a question or a comment?
No, that was when I was pressing the wrong button.
Oh, no worries. I can lower it down for you. Okay, thank you.
So we have an agenda, correct?
Yes.
Okay. The next item was a review of last month's draft minutes. And I'll go through it quickly. We discussed at length escalator lighting, in particular the glare issues during the trip down an escalator by people with disabilities, and also glare from the shiny Series 7000 train sites. We also heard that some of these issues can be looked into and any problems be corrected. We heard too that the escalators are completely replaced with all new components every 30 years, which I hadn't known, but it's good to have learned that. we talked about the rail announcements and how they conform with what we've been recommending. And we thanked Mr. Goings, who was with us through the whole process for many, many meetings. And we've come to some success with that. We did have a brief discussion of floating bus stops. Patrick Sheehan described at length some of the problems and reminded us that this was a problem that first came to our attention why do I forget? Our departed member. in any event, there continue to be problems about this. And while some aspects may differ from one jurisdiction to another or be better from one jurisdiction to another, there generally is a problem, especially when it comes to bicycles zooming down the paths next to the floating islands.
Chair Calabria?
Yes.
This is Anu. Sorry for the interruption. Your voice is a little low.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Thank you.
Sorry about that. I'm moving closer to the my microphone. there continues to be problems with passage of people with disabilities, particularly those who are of low vision when trying to cross over to bus stops. Some of the problems do not uniformly exist in each of the jurisdictions, but there remain problems in some. And so we decided that a few of us would try and launch an educational project by attending presentations of the bicycle associations or other meetings when bicycle associations are there. And Patrick Sheehan and I said we would do that. And also Philippa, I think. We then had open discussions about Mrs. Rush's visit to the e-paper sign at the National Harbor bus stop, and she was pleased to note that the problem she identified was quickly remedied. And we also very briefly decided about the fare reductions in the future. And I've been hopeful that some kind of fare reductions could be made, or even I've mentioned that some transit agencies are eliminating fares, which I think is supportive of the whole idea of achieving social equity. Let's see. Of course, Chair Posner mentioned that we should always be supportive of the idea, the concepts of safe, accessible, and sustainable means in any budget discussion. And let's see. I think that, there was a mention that we were successful in getting, again, the announcements adjusted in the train stations and the trains themselves. At the end, just as she was mentioning that we would have chance to discuss or even inspect the wayfinding apps that are being considered. Ms. Lopez mentioned that there's been some movement by the Metropolitan, our authority regarding updating filtration systems, at least in our trains. And she said that some implementation has been made, and I wondered if that included the ultraviolet C, which is actually the one that kills viruses and germs through a filtration system. And she said she would look into that. Those were the items we covered in the meeting, and maybe some references will be made to those points during the course of this meeting. But given what I've just reported about the minutes, is there a motion and a second for approving those minutes of June? Are there any objections? Oh, that was Anthony. Anthony has moved that we adopt the draft minutes. And is there a second to Anthony's motion? Hello, is there a second to Anthony's motion of approving the minutes?
I second.
Thank you. And are there any objections? Hearing none, then the draft minutes are approved. And to back up a second, we also have had a couple of looks at the May minutes, and I sent out a new draft of the minutes last meeting, last month to all members. And I guess since we didn't approve those minutes, you all have had a chance to see the original draft and then the revised draft, which was circulated to everybody last month. Are there any objections to approving those minutes of May? Hearing no objections, I assume then that the May minutes as well as the June minutes have been approved for the record. Now we should go to the next item, and you can remind us anew, the next item I think involves a discussion of the wayfinding app, am I correct?
It's the bus validator, Chair Calabria, and before the team starts their presentation, I would just see perhaps if you could adjust your speaker volume because your voice is quite low. While they're, this might be a good opportunity for you to adjust while they're presenting. So I would ask for Samuel Shade to present their presentation. The team is here. We have Mr. Garbeck. And Sam, please go ahead and introduce anyone else who is attending the meeting along with you and Mr. Garbeck.
All right, good afternoon. My name is Samuel Scheib, and I'm the project manager on the Farebox project. As I scroll through the second screen, I don't see anyone else other than Greg on the team who's on this call, but I'm appreciative of Greg being on here as well. So he might be able to answer some questions that just in case I'm not able to. I've tried to share my screen and I need permission.
Absolutely. Can you
wait a moment? Okay.
Let me know if you can do that now.
Okay. Let's see, screen two. Share.
We can see your screen.
Yep. All right. Are you seeing Next Generation Farebox?
Yes, we are.
All right, very good. Okay, thank you again for having me on here today. I'm eager to tell you about the Next Generation Farebox project. What we're doing is replacing all of the bus fare collection equipment. So the system we have now, we call it the legacy system. It was installed around 2004. The photograph at the top right shows two people working on installing this Farebox system back when it was new. These several of the systems inside are breaking and are irreplaceable. At the bottom of the screen on the right-hand side, you'll see it's called a Contron board. It's a circuit board, a green circuit board, like you might find inside a regular computer. These Contron boards have been failing for years, and we've had multiple efforts to replace them or upgrade them, and it's just time to replace this system. There's some other things inside, like a Proxim card, which is a communications device, and as well as the Tri-Reader first generation. We call that a TR1. That's the device that reads smart trip cards and smartphones. The TR1, the TR3 is no longer in production, right? So the third generation is no longer in production. So that tells you how long the TR1 has been out of date. And then the shells are warped and cracking. So these are old equipment that need to be replaced. So we have 1,666 buses in service. We will be replacing all of the fare boxes in those vehicles, as well as ordering 60 spare fare boxes. And these will come with an externally mounted validator. The validator is the device that holds the TR4. And just real quick again, the TR4 is the device that reads smart trip cards and smartphones. So this externally mounted validator will be mounted close to the farebox, and then the device also, the farebox also has a new, what we call a driver control unit or DCU. This is a replacement for the operator control unit. We changed the O to a D just for making the nomenclature clear when we're talking about them. The OCU being the old device and the DCU being a new device. And the DCU is the screen that the drivers use, the coach operators interface with. So it's a touch screen now, as opposed to a hard button, hard plastic button device, the OCU was. We have a Internet of Things, fully updated, modern touchscreen device for the drivers to use. We're replacing all of our garage equipment. So that includes vaults and probes, electronic keys, mobile probes, safes, computers, and so on. And then lastly, we're initiating a rear door boarding pilot. So we're purchasing 50 rear door boarding validators. It's the same validator that goes at the front of the bus. We're just going to mount it at the back door. And then we'll do a pilot to see how this works in service. At such time as we've completed this pilot, the agency will have to decide whether or not we want to move forward with instituting rear door boarding on all of our vehicles. And if so, we can take we can use an option we have in the contract, but we don't necessarily have to do that. So that's the overview of the farebox system replacement. Moving on to the next slide. We have worked to maximize the ADA accessibility of this device. Now on my screen, I'm seeing people's images in the way of the photographs. Is anybody else seeing that?
Yeah, no.
No? Okay, good. All right, I'll just, good. So it has a larger color customer display. Right now on the legacy device, which is an Odyssey Farebox, the customer screen is very small, and it's not black and white, but it's sort of green and dark gray. It's hard to read. So the new one will be colorful. It's much larger. And you can see in the bottom right is a stock photo from Genfare showing a Fast Fare Farebox. And then to the left of that, there is a close-up of the screen, okay? And you'll see there's four buttons underneath it for doing things like add value. And then the validator mounting is going to be under the handrail at the front of the bus, so at the windshield part of the vehicle. And you can see a mock-up of that mounted here in the top right corner. This should be easier for many people to access for tapping in and out of the vehicle. The validator accepts Smart Trip as well as mobile wallets. And I'm sure you've heard about this by now, but the wallet thing is a really big deal. This is not an app that WMATA has developed to put on smartphones. This is taking advantage of the native app offered by Apple and Android devices. The one you could put a credit card on it, you could put your membership cards on it, but you can put a Smart Trip card on it. And that means all of the native ADA accessibility options that are available on these phones are available for paying fares on WMATA. We're going to maintain cash collections as well as the add value function as well. So cash isn't going away. I'm going to go to the next screen. ADA was a major consideration in figuring out where we were going to place the validator, but there were several other things that factor in as well. First of all, we can't block the pathway for entering and exiting the vehicle. We can't interrupt the operation of the ADA ramp, and we cannot obstruct the driver's view. The photographs, there's a collage of photographs at the right side of the screen showing what we then called a J mount. This is one of the early solutions we came up with for mounting the validator. For those who can't see it, a J mount, imagine just the letter J, and the short part of the J is attached to the handrail in front of the farebox, and the long part of the J has the validator attached to it. The problem here is that it sticks up into the view of the coach operator. Hold on a moment, please. All right, sorry about that. So the J mounted device interrupted the view of the coach operator, which is not going to work. Another consideration is the validator is hardwired. So imagine if you've seen the driver barriers on the buses, you know, if you imagined, could we mount it to a driver barrier? Well, you can't because that door has to open. So the wire can't, you know, you can't just have a wire hanging out. And then for the add value function, again, if you don't know this, add value is when you take cash, put it in the fare box, and then tap your card to put the value of the cash onto a smart trip card. But it has to be next to the fare box in order for that to work. So for example, you couldn't put the validator behind the driver, which is 5 or 6 feet away from the fare box, because you can't go back and forth putting cash in and tapping. So those are some of the other challenges we faced in figuring out a way to mount the validator. And we're very happy with what we call the hanging eye mount, which is, again, in front of the is in front of the front handrail. All right. To that end, we had an event at JGB, the Jackson Graham Building, last week on the 8th. And we had members of the AAC, Tino Calabia, Denise Rush, Anthony Oberg, Patrick Sheehan showed up, and they tried out a mock-up of the fare box. This was non-operational, right? It's not plugged in. There was no power. If you can see the top right picture, there's a passenger in a wheelchair who's quote unquote tapping in, but again, it doesn't work. That's just a printed piece of paper to put on the mock-up of the fare box, so people would have an idea of how it worked. And then below him is a photograph of another gentleman with a white cane who's learning how to use where the device is hanging. We also had a significant number of WMATA staff as well, from ADAP, from the orientation and mobility team, from our safety team, from the program office. That's where I work. But our contractors were also there. Genfair and Cubic both came and helped set up this equipment for us to look at it. One last point I'd like to make there: if you look at the top photograph, you can see there's a Smurf looking top to the fare box. That's a mock-up. WMATA, I'm going to go back two images. The fare box head, the way it comes from the factory, has three things on the top that we don't use. There's what looks like a ticket coming out of the top left of the fare box. There's a target with a familiar sort of Wi-Fi looking symbol, which is a smart card reader, but it's not a smart trip card reader. And then there's a gash in the top where you would slide a magnetic strip card. And we don't use any of that. So we're getting a custom lid we call it the clean lid. And so that blue one there is just a mock-up that was printed on a 3D printer as a demonstration of how that's going to look. It's really more of an aesthetic thing. Okay, the last thing I wanted to point out real quick was just the timeline. Right now, we got a notice to proceed at the end of December for the project. We're through the concept design review phase, which was in the spring. Right now, we're moving on to the final design review. Then into the fall and the winter will be our testing phase. We'll start staging equipment in Washington, D.C. in late winter, maybe February or early March. And then as we get into spring and summer, we'll be doing the installations and the pilot for rear door boarding. At some point at the end of 2022, we need to decide as an agency whether we're going to implement the rest of the rear door option. And then lastly, in 2023 and beyond, we'll continue doing installations, and then we have the warranty period. And I'm happy to entertain any questions you might have now.
Are there any questions of members, please?
Chair Calabia, I see Ms. Rush has her hand up. Ms. Rush, go ahead, please.
Yes. Okay, this is Denise Rush. As you already stated, I was there on Thursday. The box itself seems to be nice, but like you said, it was a mock-up. It wasn't connected. So if there were persons who could see, they can't see, you know, how clear you can see. The problem I have is that I can't see at all. And they said it will never tell me, you know, I owe money because it doesn't talk. but for a person who can see, we don't really know until it starts working if there's a glare, if it's a good color, if it's clear. And I think we should kind of know that. I guess there's going to be another demonstration. I'm not really sure. Okay, so then I get on, and I'm ready to get off. Well, unfortunately, that day, the first bus I was on, the button wasn't working. So I said, wait a minute, you went past my stop. I want to get off. And they said, it's not working. But on the second bus, I could push the button and hear it tell the driver that I wanted to get off. So I was relieved. I was feeling a little better that they had a working button on that bus. Now, I went up on the steps walking to see how that was, and then I went up in my wheelchair, and I was on a bus that was 2011. That bus was easy to maneuver with your wheelchair, but 2019 or 18 bus, it wasn't. It was difficult to maneuver on the wheelchair, with the wheelchair, to get on that bus. And I know the purpose of the fare boxes is to move everything along, but if a person with a wheelchair gets on there and asks to be just anchored down, the people going to get off the bus because it takes a while. So I wanted that to be noted, and they could see. I think in the videos that they took, that you have to maneuver in a wheelchair to get on the bus. Did you all see that? Hello?
Yes,
hello.
Mr.
Did you all see that in the video?
Ms. Rush, this is Carol Lopez. They did not show a video of what happened of the presentation. They just had one photograph showing how a person who uses a wheelchair can tap onto the device, and the other person was standing and how they would use the device. There was no video presentation.
Okay.
So I think
I want that to be noted.
So it's noted, Ms. Rush. Thank you.
The target will chirp if a card is accepted or not. And as I noted before, the app can help people with visual impairments to navigate the fare system if you have a smartphone, either an Android or an iPhone. But there are certainly limitations to what the device can do for making announcements for privacy concerns, and just the architecture of the device itself is not set up for that. I don't know who's next on my screen. Anthony Oberg appears to be next.
Yes, this is Anthony. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Yes, go ahead.
Okay, great. I just want to reiterate some of what Ms. Russ was just saying. I think the timeline on the screen shows that there will be testing in fall 2021 and winter 2022. So I think the important point that should be noted that Ms. Rush raised was that even though, you know, I was the one in the wheelchair to tap my card and everything, I'm only one person. And so, you know, usability is going to be a big factor in this and whether or not all people who use wheelchairs or have varying disabilities can use it. As long as that is noted and as you sort of roll it out, we sort of have an idea of what challenges could occur and how you could address them. Maybe the chirp isn't hearable or whatever. I think there may be more challenges with the actual function versus the mockup. So I think I wanted to reiterate that point.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, next would be Vanessa Coles. Vanessa, go ahead.
Yes, thank you. So my question is probably further down the line is what type of advertisement or training will you be able to provide those that are blind and do take the bus to let them know where things are situated? You know, other than it's going to be like some kind of commercials on TV or other than the website, how would you let people know that are blind how to use this new system?
So this week, or sorry, next, let's see, that's the 20th. So next week on the 20th, we're going to have another event similar to the one we did at JGB, but this one will be headed up by our customer research team. And they're going to have focus groups come in and they're going to observe how people interact with the fare boxes. And that will be the first layer of information we can use to determine how we need to educate the public on this. We have a communications team actively involved in the project, and they've already submitted initial drafts to our team on how they want to handle public participation. So there will be plenty of it. So we're well prepared for the fact that this will be a new system and people are going to need to know how to do it. I couldn't tell you off the top of my head what the plan is exactly, because that's still well over a year away, but we do have a team that's actively engaged in the process.
So then you will solicit from the public or the AAC some blind individuals to give you input?
Yeah, I don't know. I imagine that would happen, but I can't tell you for sure. That was in the last report I saw on that.
Okay, thank you.
Sure.
Thank you, Vanessa. Next is Deborah Fisher. Deborah, go ahead, please.
Thank you. It's Deborah Fisher. My question is, we train a lot of the folks with developmental and intellectual disabilities to be able to ask the operator for help or assistance when they're having difficulty. And I'm just wondering, is the location of the device convenient for the bus operator to be able to provide that assistance for someone who may need it?
It is. It's located within a few inches of the fare box itself. They're very close together, and they have to be for the add value process. So you're in the same space you would occupy for paying the fare on the present fare box Odyssey that we have.
Okay, so that it wouldn't be difficult for the operator, and it's not going to add to the time involved for them to assist this type of a passenger.
Correct.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Deborah. Next would be Barbara Melville. Barbara, go ahead.
Hey there. Hey, guys. Thanks so much for coming. I understand it's a mock-up. I was wondering exactly if you could say what needs to be seen or experienced visually to operate it. Also, I have a need to see the font options. If you could send those out to the group. We could probably, as a person with partial sight, we kind of know what works best for us in the group. I agree with some of the stuff that Denise was saying and the others about sunlight being an issue, especially on a bus. I also agree that the front of the bus would be probably the preferred option because that's where most of us will be entering. It should probably be at a raised height at our eye level, at least one of the machines. So I guess that would be the back. And I don't know exactly what this looks like from the top, but I can definitely see people putting cash, coins, other things in the wrong slot. Because when you're entering a bus, you just have a limited amount of time. You don't want to hold up the people behind you. So if that could be addressed at some point. I'm also wondering if, I think I saw a slide there that had 4 or 5 buttons. Are those raised or are they flat? And finally, can you use a credit card to pay for your fare as opposed to the app? Because I have been on some buses where you can pay with the card, and it's super convenient being a tourist and not having to buy into all the local things.
Okay, there's a lot there. Let me know if I forget something. Let's just go in reverse order. So on the credit card, you can use your credit card on your smartphone, whether it's Android or Apple, which is convenient. And we hope that our tourist community will use that all the time and avoid our fare vending machines, which can be challenging. So I really hope we see. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, not you just can't tap your credit card is what you're saying.
Correct.
Okay.
That's not available. The buttons are raised. GenFare only makes fare boxes. It's the only thing they do. So they're very good at making fare boxes. They're fully familiar with ADA requirements, and most transit agencies in the country use their products. So also the glare is not an issue. You can see the screen even on a bright bus.
Well, maybe you need to let us discover that, because, 2020 vision, that's a whole lot different than ours.
Sure. You asked about things you would need to see on the fare box.
Yes.
The driver screen on the fare box is for showing cash transactions, right? So it only tells you how much money you've put in that. The validator shows that you've paid a fare or not through a Smart Trip card or a smartphone, right? So they are separate devices that do different things, but they don't mirror one another. So you wouldn't, if you tapped your Smart Trip card to the validator, it's not going to say on the fare box screen that you've paid a fare via Smart Trip card, right? They're isolated in that way. And then they communicate with the DCU. The DCU is really the brain of this new fare box system.
Well, from the perspective of the rider, what would they be needing to see on the screen is what I'm asking.
If you're paying a cash fare, you would just see you add $1, you add $2, or if you're paying the reduced fare, you only put $1 in and it shows you $1, and that's what you need to see. If you're adding value, it's really the same thing, except that you also have to tap the validator screen or the tap the validator with your Smart Trip card as part of the process, just like you do now. But the fare box will still show you how much money you're inserting as you're inserting the funds.
But there's auditory feedback is what you said earlier. Is that right?
Right.
Okay.
And so that's all. Those are the things that one would see on the fare box.
Okay.
And what else did you ask? I think I got them all.
Oh, I was asking about, just being concerned about people possibly putting things in the wrong slot.
Oh, yeah. Actually, I'm really glad you said that. So the clean lid that I mentioned earlier, the one that looks blue on the one of the slides I showed, that has two fewer places to make that mistake, right? So the very top thing where it distributes magnetic cards or smart cards, if you buy the regular GenFare fare box, that can be confusing. That can kind of look like a coin valid or a coin slot. But this one, the coin slot, it's shaped quite differently from the dollar bill slot. Those are the only two places to insert things on the actual fare box. And the validator doesn't have any place to insert anything. So there shouldn't be too much confusion on that point, but it looks a lot like the places everything are located is not that dissimilar from an Odyssey fare box. However, as someone else mentioned a moment ago, there's going to be an education component to this and there will be a learning curve. So, with any new product, it's going to take a little bit of time to figure out how it works.
We don't have time so much on the bus. So as we could make this pretty simple to begin with, that would really be helpful. And I'm sure the drivers would appreciate it. Do these raised buttons have some kind of indicators on them, like as to what the buttons do?
Yes, it's on the screen itself above the button. It says what the button does.
But tactily?
I don't know. It's a good question. I don't know if it has Braille or not.
Well, not so many people know Braille. I mean, it's great for the ones that do. Mm-hmm. But I'm talking about maybe, you know, you look at your keyboard, you look at the number 5, there's a little nib there.
Right.
Okay, that may be helpful, but if something, I'm just going to make this up, okay? So sure. If one button is to pay, maybe that could have a raised P on top of it. You get what I'm saying?
Yes.
Okay, so if you could look into that, that would be, I'm just trying to think of some scenarios that might delay people getting on or not doing a transaction that's what was intended.
That's good. Thank you. I understand.
Well, that's it. Well, thank you so much for answering the detailed questions.
Sure. You asked great questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Barbara. Next, Sam, we have Donnie Bush. Ms. Bush, go ahead.
Okay. I have two questions. One, I'm concerned about the chirp. The chirp is, okay, when you board the bus, a person is visually impaired or whatever, and it chirps. Is the only reason it chirps is they don't have enough money on their card, or is it for any other reason?
There are at least two tones. One of the tones is, hey, it worked. And the other tone is, there's not enough fare on here to pay the fare. I don't think there's a third one. I think it's just the two. I could find out and get back to you on that. But there are those two, and they sound quite different, just to signify that you either have paid the fare or you have not.
So at that point, does the visually impaired person still board the bus with the chirp that says you don't have enough, or are they supposed to pay right then?
Visually impaired passenger is a passenger like any other. They are supposed to pay a fare, and I don't believe our drivers tell people they have to pay a fare. So that's an operations thing. I don't think I'm qualified to tell you about.
Yeah, how will they know what they owe or anything?
The driver sees it on the driver control unit, the touch screen I mentioned earlier. It shows up what's happening in front of him, you know, on the other side of the driver barrier. So it'll say this person's 50 cents short or whatever it is. Or it says, good to go, that's the full fare. Or it tells them that the person's paying an add value or doing an add value transaction.
So the driver will be able to relate that to the person board.
Certainly. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay, that's good. The second question is, you said that this device would be in the front and the rear. So does that mean people will board simultaneously from the rear and the front?
It does. Yes. That's the idea with the rear door pilot, is to see just how that goes in our system. It's done in other places, but we want to see how it goes in the WMATA service area. So we have 50 buses that will be outfitted with this target, and we'll be observing just how the process goes, and then WMATA will make a decision whether or not to do that with every vehicle.
So with the vehicles in boarding, wheelchairs must board from the front?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Sure thing.
Thank you, Donnie. Next, we have Doris, right? Doris, go ahead, please.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes, we can.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure, because right at this moment I've got a mask on. What I wanted to ask is, I was listening to, I believe it was Barbara's comments, because I came in late, but And I think she was spot on, and I'm sorry I wasn't able to make it down there last Thursday. So the thing that I want to kind of try to say is that it's sounding to me like there could be some confusion for consumers boarding the bus, and particularly when the bus is en route. You know, if it's standing at a bus bay at a subway station, that's one thing, but or the end of the line stop. But it's another thing when you're going through in rush hour traffic, or even if you're boarding a bus at I'm going to name a particular spot so that if somebody knows about it, like Southern Towers, which is a big apartment complex down on Seminary Road in Alexandria, and the buses come rolling through there one right after the other, and you know, it's one thing if you know all the setup on the fare box, and it's another thing if you don't. So I'm concerned about, you know, bus dwelling time because from one perspective, and just frustration from the perspective of the rider. And since I also have a hearing impairment, I'm wondering, even if the driver is helping you, if they have that shield up, you know, how are you going to be able to hear what's going on, what the driver's saying? It's already difficult anyway. So those are the kinds of things that I'm thinking of, and without some, and except one other thing, WMATA's system is, you know, we're the nation's capital. We have a lot of tourists. If you're somebody with a disability, but in this case, certainly people with vision impairments or hearing impairments or both, knowing quickly enough how to get everything done when you mount a bus so that you don't hold the whole line up is a very kind of can be a very frustrating circumstance. So I'm wondering if we don't need to give some thought about how actually that's going to translate into what happens out on the road.
So the meeting we're having next week on the 20th, where we're doing the customer research component, the focus groups, that's the kind of stuff they want to find out. Those are they're laser focused on avoiding any increase in dwell time. So they want to know what would trip a customer up boarding. And by the way, they are recruiting ADA customers as well for this effort. So they want to know where people are getting stuck and what they need help with, so that when we're doing the training component, as we're beginning implementation, we can,
like one thing on that, at least certainly for local people are going to need some travel training, just an orientation to the buses, and just general people are, let alone people with disabilities. And the other thing is that if somebody's a visitor to the area on business or tourist or whatever, they're really going to need to be able to figure out very quickly how the thing works. So.
Sure.
Okay. Thank you, Doris. Sam, at this point, I don't see any other hands up from the members, but I would ask if Patrick Sheehan.
Calabia?
Yes, okay. I had my hand up.
Okay, great, go ahead.
First of all, you say there's a slot for paper cash. And when I visited the both buses, there was on the facsimile of this device holes, which I assume were for coins. And for example, you mentioned that someone could tell you that you might be short 50 cents. Is there a hole for 50 cents and one for quarters and one for dimes, or what?
It's funny you should ask. There's actually just a coin slot, and one of our regional partners has a token that's too big. So it's one slot for everything. And one of our regional partners has a token that's too big. So they're having to order new tokens because GenFair, they say they've got this thing worked out with such precision. It's the fastest thing in the universe and it works so great, but it can't take a coin that's any larger than a single inch in diameter. So yes, you just have the one slot. As it happens, I've got the mock-up with me. So for those who can see this,
yes, I see it.
There's the coin slot here, which very much looks like a coin slot, right? It's shaped to kind of guide that in there. And then on this side is the dollar bill handling. And then it's all backwards when I look at it. The four buttons go, you know, here. And then the screen is there.
And what are the four buttons for the four holes that you just put your fingers through?
One is for add value, one is for check value, and I'm not sure we have a use for the other two. Different agencies have different requirements, so we might not need the other two, but we have four available to us.
Well, basically, members of the committee have been concerned about unbanked riders, that is, riders who are dependent on dollar bills or paper bills and coins. So just to confirm, unbanked riders or those who must use cash, they will be able to access buses?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yep.
Okay. The other thing is you mentioned Google Pay and Apple Pay and smart cards. Well, I assumed when I visited the buses that, and I think I heard someone say you could use American Express or MasterCard or whatever. Is that true?
You cannot pay it to the fare box, but you can pay through your phone using, I can't tell you, I know what credit cards Apple will take, but I imagine it's all of them. So you could pay through your phone. And of course, our machines and our stations have credit card payment.
Yeah, but on the bus, if you have one of those, what are the credit cards? You're about 3 by 1.5 that fit in your wallet. You couldn't take the credit card out of your wallet and use it on the bus?
Correct. You could not do that.
Yeah, Sam, let me see if I can offer a little further commentary on that. Around the nation, there are several bus systems and subway systems like New York City Transit that have done a comprehensive upgrade of both the readers on board their buses as well as the rail system. Plus, they have a back office processing software improvement that allows that direct payment using your, as you used in an example, a contactless American Express card. They can accept that. What we're doing in Washington, we're sort of taking this in incremental steps. We have not yet done the back office upgrade to be able to accommodate that, but it is on our radar screen, and we're taking the very first steps to be able to get to that point. The good news is that the technology that we're putting in the buses, the edge devices, these new validators that Sam had referred to, have the technical capability. When we go to the next step and do the back office improvement, then you'll be able to use your contactless American Express card and pay directly at the validator, and it'll all be processed straight to your bill. Okay. Now, let me temper expectations and say that's a couple years from now. But the good news is it's on our radar screen. We're undertaking work right now to start that process.
I asked that because I assumed that you could use an MX or a MasterCard or whatever. And in fact, I've used credit cards in New York City.
Mm-hmm.
But you say that it's 2 years away from...
It is a couple years away from now. It is a comprehensive back office system processing engine that we have to, you know, literally migrate to, awful lot of testing, awful lot of vetting. And, you know, the good news is we've just initiated sort of the formative work to be able to get to what's called an open payment system, which is what New York has that you're referencing.
Right. And just to back up on a different aspect of this, Carol was able to get the, Carol Lopez was able to get the hardware moved along the grab rails, which makes it easier for some people to use it than where the validator was originally. Mm-hmm. Carol, do you want to mention what you advised and what was finally seen during our visit to the buses last week?
Thank you, Tina. Yes, ADAP participated in the review and location review for this validator. And not me, but as a group, we tested and we noticed that if we put it elsewhere, it would not comply with the ADA compliant reach ranges. So somebody in a wheelchair could not reach the other location that was proposed. The whole purpose of that test that involved Samuel and Greg was aware of it was to see if that complied. I mean, the whole team went towards that decision, and the team actually proposed other locations where it could be. And we found that the only place that was accessible ADA at an ADA compliant reach range for somebody who uses a wheelchair or somebody who's standing was the location where we found, so they wouldn't interrupt the entrance flow for you know, the width of the clear width of the entrance for somebody who's coming into with a mobility device into the bus. So,
great, thank you. Yes. Now, separate from the validator device, Denise mentioned that she had difficulty once she was on with her wheelchair in maneuvering. And also she would have needed probably the bus operator to leave his or her seat in order to help her secure the wheelchair. I should point out that we've had a discussion prior to this of at least one securement device which is self-securing, and it's called the Quantum device. I forget the manufacturer's name, but it was the Quantum device, which once a wheelchair is on the bus and is in position, the user can touch one button and these sort of arms would come out and adjust would secure the chair. And also when one has to leave, there's a button, or maybe it's the same button, but in any event, the wheelchair user can himself or herself touch that button and the securement would release it so that the wheelchair could maneuver and allow the rider to dismount the bus. But I just wanted to remind folks about that. It was something that Denise thoughtfully brought up when she did have trouble trying to secure herself in the bus. Thank you. Are there any other mm-hmm. questions?
Thank you, Chair Calabria. I do see that Doris and Vanessa have their hands up. And before we go back to them, I just want to ask if Patrick Sheehan, who also participated, had any comments that he would like to share. If not, then we can go to Doris, then Vanessa. Patrick Sheehan, did you have any comments that you would like to share?
Thank you, Anu. No, I'm good at this time.
Okay, thank
thanks. You, the stuff that I would have brought up has already been covered.
Okay, thank you. Doris, thank I see you, your hand. You're most welcome. Doris, I see your hand up. Do you have any further questions or comments? Doris?
Maybe she's muted.
No. She's not muted, actually. Doris, if you can hear me, I see your hand up. If you have any questions, you can state your comments now. Okay, Vanessa, I see your hand up. Did you have any further questions or comments?
Yes, in the same vein of the money machine for those that have cash, is there going to be some way, say their dollar bill was wrinkled and the system wasn't taking it, and can they give their money to the driver? Or if they have a five and all they need is a one, is there a machine, or you have to bring exact change?
Well, you wouldn't need exact change, but because you can always put $5 on a smart trip card, and so it's stored for later use, but you can't get change on a bus, and a driver cannot accept cash either. But you can always put that $5 on a card and then have it the next time you need to ride.
So I mean, so when they're at the door of the bus, they're purchasing the card at that time. Is that what you're saying?
No, there's something called an add value transaction. So you tap in, you hit a button on the fare box, you tap the validator, let it know that you've got a card there, and then you can put the $5 in, and then the fare box is finished, and that money, that $5 would instantly be loaded to your card, and it could be used, you know, for that trip, and then again for the return trip, or later in the week if you're already on your way home. But you can't get the $4 back in cash.
What about the rejected bill that you just can't seem to get it to take it?
That's probably a driver discretion problem. Yeah, they deal with wet and torn and old bills all the time. I couldn't tell you anything about that from the fare box perspective. Although the fare boxes it's a brand new fare box. It will be better at collecting bills than the old fare box. But probably that problem will persist to some degree or another. And I'm afraid I don't know what the operations rules are for that. Maybe Greg does, but I don't know what the drivers are supposed to do in that situation, I'm afraid.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you, Vanessa. Barbara, I see you have your hand up again. Did you have any further questions or comments?
Yes, I did, thank you. Sam, I was wondering if for the focus group that's upcoming, will that also be a mock-up, or would that be the real deal?
No, the real won't be ready until, say, October at the earliest, and that'll be a device that's for testing, what we call a first article inspection. So even that one will have more work done to it after it's produced. But the group that's going to do this up in, they're doing it at Rockville Station, they are just going to use the target mock-up. They're not even going to use the fare box. So it's just to look at where the location of the validator will be.
Yeah, okay, that's what I thought. A lot of my concerns pertain to the device as it's happening live. So if you could, like I said, even send some kind of documentation that's written, you know, with photos that we could see about, you know, what the options are on the display screen, font size, that kind of thing.
I can send you the, I think I need to check, but I think I can send you the the screen flows that we have now. And if you have a look at those, let me double check, yeah. But I think so.
There has to be some machines out in use now, and maybe somebody could measure, like, say, the height of the letters. That'd be very helpful.
Carol, you viewed those design screens. I don't mean to put you on the spot. Do you have any commentary on that? The only reason I mentioned it, I don't know that I can send them, is I don't know if they're still proprietary, right? Okay, it's not a finished product yet, but if you want to comment on that.
So Barbara, we have indicated that the background should be black and the letter should be white, and the font size should be a minimum of 5/8 of an inch. And that they have provided some of the screens have much larger, there are several screens, and some of them have much larger text on them than others, depending on what it is. And the reality is this is a very simple device. You tap it, you go in, your card gives away $2 if you don't have a discounted card, or it gives you, I guess, $1 if you have a reduced fare card, and you go in. Now, if you tap your smart trip card, if you tap your phone and you don't have enough money, you can use the audio from your phone to pay your fare. And you can use your very familiar phone device to pay your fare on your own. Now, if you don't have a phone, you just have a card and you have cash, you just go and put, you fish $1 and then the other, and then you pay your fare. If you want to know how much you need to put in, you can ask the operator, what's my balance? I can't see the screen. And the operator can tell you that. The only difference is that that everybody is used to putting their smart trip card on top of the fare machine. And I'm sorry, I have to hang up the telemarketers for some reason. I can't do it. I'm going to pause for a second until it stops. Okay, thank you. So what the difference is that you have the same fare box. It makes the same noises when you tap your card. If you are successful at your card, it gives you the same beep as we've always had. And when you don't have enough money, it gives you the same nay beep that we've always had. Actually, that's something that WMATA has recommended, not necessarily me, but everybody else. So the only difference is where you're gonna tap your card. And then it gives you additional things you can do with your card. So that, I just wanted to clarify that.
Yeah, well, what might seem to be very simple to someone who could see, it's kind of a mystery to someone who is struggling to see it, and it adds a whole lot of stress, like Doris said, and maybe that, who knows, it may prevent them from wanting to ride again. And that's probably one of the whole, you know, we definitely want to get people onto the bus rail as opposed to other options. So, the larger, the better on the font, please.
Okay. So Barbara, I think that your point is very important. And I think that we, as WMATA, should work towards providing you an easier way, an easy way of understanding the new product. We invited our system travel trainers to participate in the tests last week. Perhaps we can work with them to figure out how we can communicate how this can be used. We can discuss that with the advisory committee about how to communicate that, because it's not that much different than using the fare card, the fare box that we have now. It's just the fact that you're touching another device, but we should be able to work on that.
Thank you so much.
if there are no other questions, we're running behind. So one last final question, or let's move to the new topic. No other questions.
This is Doris. Hello?
Okay, yes. Doris.
Yes. Go.
Could
Doris.
I just... Okay, so the way... when is this going to be operational? I'm hearing that we're not going to get the real deal until October. And then I assume there's going to be some kind of installation on the buses. So I'm guess I'm just trying to ask, when is this going to be in full scale operation on a majority or all buses? And then also, I'm just curious. So did any of the travel trainers come to last week?
Yes, we had two travel trainers, and and another person, their supervisor, on site last week.
Okay.
And then on the installations will begin next summer, so the summer of 2022, and they'll continue for over a year.
So there is time for us to get some things worked out. That's what I was asking, basically. Yeah. And so anyway, there was something else, but I forget what it was.
And if I could just make one last comment here, the essential thing is to get buy-in from this committee and from the ADA community on the validator mounting, because this is something we need to let Cubic know that we accept their solution. They're still waiting, and it's a bit overdue, and they have to order the parts in order to get everything in the system so we can do those installations next summer. So the sooner we can get some resolution on that, the better.
So my question was actually for Deborah Fisher, if she hasn't already said this, but I'm just curious about what the feelings are for people with intellectual and cognitive disabilities about just the whole situation of having to use this and whether it sounds frustrating or not frustrating, or what you think it'll take to get that group of that constituency comfortable.
You'd like me to answer that? I mean, I think, Doris, that actually the use of the devices, the Apple Wallet or the app from the Google system are actually going to make it easier, as long as my question earlier was that the bus operator is available and able to assist, particularly if there is insufficient funds in the system, because typically the folks that rely on bus and rail have somebody who is helping them set up their cards or their device systems. So I think as long as the operators can easily respond, I think it actually will be easier for them, assuming that the training is sufficient, which I do believe is true for everybody. So thank you, Doris.
Okay, thank you, Doris, and thank you, Deborah. Ms. Rush, I see your hand up. We can take a last question or comment, and then we can move on to the next topic. Go ahead, Ms. Rush.
Thank you. This is Denise Rush. With all the testing and the programs and the activities that they set up beforehand to use new applications or training, we have a committee. Right now, I think it's like 18 on the committee. A good show of just 4 is not enough. We need the AAC committee to participate along with the public. We have the disabilities, all of us have something, and
we are the ones who really know what questions to ask and what things can happen. But a person who can see, who can walk, doesn't have a disability, on a rainy day, has their umbrella in their hand, their pocketbook, or their backpack. They got to get out their telephone. They got to tap that. They got to do different things. It's not easy for them, and they don't have a handicap. So you know it's going to be hard for people pushing it. How are you going to get on with your wheelchair, and then you got to get your phone out, and somebody snatched your phone? You got a lot of things going on. We have to participate in these things to see what happens and how difficult it is. That's all I had to say.
Okay. Thank you.
Excuse me. Chair Calabria, I would like to ask a question, please.
Sure, yes.
Okay. When WMATA tries to do a procurement of something, it takes so much technology, so much research, so much of everything you could possibly think of, that we get to a point and where we were involved in where the mounting, basically the only thing ADAP has reviewed right now is where the mounting is going, is proposed to be. And I did not think that we could make a decision of where this device could be or anything just within our office. Our office has agreed on a particular location that is accessible to people who use wheelchairs, people of short stature, and people who are tall can also reach this location. And it doesn't get in the way or impact any the entrance of someone into the bus. So I have insisted that this team presents this solution to the advisory committee, particularly because we would like to get buy-in from the advisory committee on whether this location is okay. And so the team is asking if you could possibly give us whether you're okay for WMATA to continue this process, or whether you have some reason why you don't think that the payment validator should be located where it is.
Well, thank you, Carol. We can still have individuals who have further questions or repeat their questions, submit them in writing. This is the final year meeting of this program year. But I think in answer to your question, other people have an ability to write to us. I would second, though, the statement that Denise mentions. There are other members of the committee, and we would hope that they could inspect these things. The wayfinding business is coming up. It shouldn't just be two or four people who come from an 18-member committee. It shouldn't be just two or four of us who do that. More of us should, and probably more of us can. So in response to what Denise says, I second her idea and encourage other people to do it. Speaking of the wayfinding, I think, Anu, that is the next topic.
Tino, just one moment, please. It's just that we have brought in people from other places to come and specifically talk to the Accessibility Advisory Committee. We cannot keep this project on hold. So we're gonna, our office finds the location to be compliant, and we extended the discussion to you because we would like to get your input, the advisory committee. So we have done, WMATA has completed all the steps required. So WMATA needs to move forward. So if none of them, our office does not finds that the location proposed is ADA compliant. if the advisory committee who actually went to visit the the testing site does not have an objection for the payment validator, of whether the payment validator is at an ADA compliant location, which is similar to the fair, similar to the fare gates in the metro system. It's to the side, it's accessible to people. So that's what this team actually wants to resolve, particularly because you're not going to be meeting next month, and this is where we need to get your feedback. So I would like to see if there's any opposition to that location.
Denise?
This is Denise Rush. The location of the box is fine with me. If that's the question,
yes,
I say the location is not a problem. The problems that we have is we didn't really see it really work, or other things, getting on the bus and stuff. But the location of where it is, of the box, is fine.
Okay.
For me.
Yeah, for me too. And I applaud you, Carol, for having adjusted the location of part of the device along the grab bar rail. I think that was great. I don't think anybody objects to that.
Okay.
But in any event, can we now move to the next item? And I think it's Carol who's going to make the presentation. On the wayfinding, is that the next item?
Chair Kanabe, actually the topic of discussion on the agenda is for the committee to talk about the potential topics of interest for discussion for next year. That is the topic on the agenda.
Oh, we are not looking. I thought we were going to hear about wayfinding prior to our inspection of the wayfinding.
No. Okay. We had bus validator device location discussion, which we just concluded. And I do want to take a quick second to thank Sam and Greg for coming and sharing so much information and having the discussion and taking the time to do so. So thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thank you for having us.
Yes, thank you. And the next topic on the agenda is the work plan recommendations for future discussion. That is the topic we have on the agenda. And the purpose of this topic is so that the committee can give us some recommendations for the topic that they would like to have for future discussion. We have no meetings in August, and come September, we can have a few topics of discussions that the committee would like to discuss.
Well, to start off, Phil mentioned last meeting during part of the discussion that there's to be a new entrance to the metro station. I think it's at the Crystal City station. And with respect to the idea, the concept, it occurs to me that if it were possible for us to try and collect together all the recommendations on stations, and that would include elevators and elevator buttons, the lighting for escalators and such. In a sense, it would be repackaging what we've talked about over the years and any other new ideas, so that with this new station, right from the start, there could be the benefit of our contributions of the past and current. I would hope that we could put that on our agenda for working at least starting in September.
Okay.
Yes. Are there any other suggestions, folks?
Go ahead, Ms. Rush.
This is just a suggestion. We used to have the AAC go up to the OCC office and see how it works. But this is a suggestion for the floating bus stops. Instead of having a meeting, we could get a bus to take us to the floating bus stops, one of them, and see what's going on. It is horrible for a person who can see to get from across to where they need to get to the bus stop and experience it and see if we can do something about that. That floating bus stop is horrific. If we had a bus to take all of us up there, we have the meeting on the bus or whatever, and then we're experiencing the bikes going by and the cars going by and a person with a wheelchair, and it's horrific. This is just a suggestion.
Denise, again, I have to applaud you on your suggestion. We hadn't thought of that earlier. If it's possible for a bus to accommodate members of the committee to see what the actual problems have been, the person who's I mentioned that I couldn't remember that Charlie Crawford was the first to alert us to these kind of problems, and I applaud Patrick for reminding us that Charlie wished that something could be done and that we ought to do it. And in fact, Patrick and Philippa, I believe, and I are willing to go to bicycle associations or wherever there are opportunities to talk about the problems that we have with floating bus stops. We should. But
and maybe we can invite a board member to go and experience it with us.
Oh, no, why don't we do that first, and then we'll have more to talk about when we talk about with the bicycle associations.
So okay, I was just...
I love your idea, Denise, that perhaps one of the next meeting dates could involve us being on a bus to visit the kind of problem, to see the kind of problems that may arise from these floating bus stops.
All right. Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you, Ms. Rush.
Thank you.
And I would just say that we will definitely look into that, and as things open up more and going forward, however things work out about the in-person meetings, so on and so forth, we will definitely look into that. Thank you. That's a great suggestion. Next, I see Deborah Fisher and then Barbara Melville. Go ahead, Barbara. Excuse me. Go ahead, Deborah.
Thank you. It's Deborah Fisher. As things are reopening and given all the changes that are being implemented, I think one thing that would be really helpful would be for us to take a look at some kind of communication about the changes, about positive opportunities with using both the fixed route and metro access, but particularly the intellectual and developmental disability population has been away from public transportation for the most part over the last year and a half. And I think that to try to bring people back to the use of particularly the fixed route system, I think that developing some kind of materials that are both informative and reassuring would be very useful. And so I think that might be something that this committee could consider also in terms of how travel training is going to proceed. I suspect we're going to see some moving backwards in the sense that people are going to be more inclined to go back to metro access when there is no reason why they can't use some of the fixed route systems and so forth. And the use of their cell phones to with paying fares is has that advantage because family members like to track location through those phone devices. So there's a lot of opportunity that I think could be taken advantage of here. And so I do think it might be useful.
Deborah, thank you. I don't think Paul Somerfort is in our subcommittee meeting, but his meeting is next week. And maybe Debbie, you can bring that up, and since it is something of importance to Metro Access and his subcommittee, I think is a great idea.
So unfortunately, Tino, I'm going to be away next Monday and I won't be there. I actually think that while Metro Access is important, I actually think the fixed route systems for this group would be very beneficial because there are a lot of people who use Metro Access because family members are afraid for them to use the fixed routes when they actually could use it if they understood the safety devices that are being put into place, the systems that they can rely on for payment and so forth. So I think providing the information to the group can go a long way towards helping to begin to address some of the concerns that these folks have. Sure. And in Maryland in particular, where over this next year, there's going to be more and more community-based programming during the day, there'll be even greater incentives for folks to use fixed routes. So I just think it's an opportunity given that people have been away from the system.
Right. Okay. Well, I will be attending Paul's subcommittee meeting, and I know you're emphasizing fixed route. I because you use the term Metro Access, that's what led me to believe
sure.
that it might be. But
no, I appreciate
bring,
that.
Yeah, I will bring it up at that next meeting and see what can be done between the two committees to further educate us and the public about the matters that you just brought up. So that
would
be
great.
An item of our that should be certainly an item on our work agenda. Are there any?
Thank you, Deborah. Chair
Thank you.
Calabia. I see Mr. Blake has his hand up, so I believe Mr. Blake wants to make some comments to Deborah's comments. Mr. Blake, go ahead, please.
Yes, good evening or good afternoon, everyone. Great meeting thus far. And I just wanted to follow up on Ms. Fisher's point and reiterate to her and the entire committee, and you all have heard me talk about it recently more and more as we've been talking about more philosophical things in some of the other meetings, but I wanted to reiterate that as soon as we can go back to less than 6 feet and in-person contact and up-close discussions and training, our commitment is to travel training and to ensure an ever-increasing accessible fixed route system. That's our number one task here. I mean, Metro Access, as we said, is very important. It's vital. It's part of the civil rights. And you know, I spend a lot of time and energy on Metro Access. But the fact of the matter is our number one commitment to the federal civil rights laws and to just the concept that why I'm here and why Carol and all of us are here and do what we do is to ensure that people with disabilities have access to the nation's finest public transit system, that is Metro. So as soon as we can get back to some sort of normal, our financial and operational commitment is to travel training and to get people back to utilizing the fixed route system as normal and as easy as possible. I just wanted to let her know we're with her and the entire committee on that commitment.
Great.
Thank you, Mr. Blake.
And I know that, and that's why I think it would be helpful for us to come up with some written materials as well, because I do think that we have to get this population to travel train. And I think materials for them helps.
Yes.
Okay, thank you, Deborah. Dr. Posner, we haven't heard from you yet. Go ahead, please.
Thank you. I have three suggestions. One of them is very old. I think we need to continue to monitor the stations on Silver Line Part 2. And I know that's 2 to 3 years away, but we shouldn't lose track of where it is. The other thing is there's a really nice autonomous bus service that has been set up at Dunloring. And I think it would be worth following any future autonomous bus services as part of the bus transformation plan. And I know they're working on it, but I think we should have some input to autonomous buses, because the autonomous bus workshops I've attended, the elderly and disability community have had some requirements that they wanted on them. And I think it would be nice for us to give our input to WMATA when they're planning on setting them up. I think they're great, but it would be good for us to follow it. The other thing is something that Denise Rush mentioned to me when she did her site visit for the new paperless signage at the bus stops, the automated signage system. And the first time she went out there, it didn't work, and she complained, and it was fixed. And the second time she went out, it was fixed. And I know some of these new devices that are very good are going to go into place, but it's similar to elevators and escalators. If the station manager doesn't know they're out of service, nobody calls to have them fixed. And for those devices that are going to be on bus routes, we might suggest that when the bus driver arrives at that bus stop, they look out the window or get off the bus and walk over to make sure it's working. And then they can call it in as a not working device. I think that might be the least expensive, most efficient way to do it. If the driver can do that, but they're pretty close to where you board the buses. And if nobody does check on them, they may not be valuable in winter months, in rainy days and days when those sort of outdoor devices don't work anymore. So those are my three suggestions for us to follow up on. Thank you.
Thank you. It is 5:43, and I just want to ask if there are any customers, any members of the public who intend to make any public comments today. If you do, please do let me know now.
Oh, this is Barbara. May I make a comment? It's pertaining to this, not in the public comment forum.
Okay.
Go ahead, what I heard was a suggestion to have a little field trip out to the bus stops. And I would like to say that while I agree that that is a very important topic and an issue for people who have impairments or not, I think that that would not be an efficient use of Metro staff time. I believe there's other ways that the members of the committee and the public attending the meetings can get information about this. We don't need to experience everything to get a good picture of what's going on, because there is such a thing as opportunity cost. Because when these things really take a lot of time for Metro, et cetera, to plan, and maybe it doesn't seem like it, but having been a planner, I know that. And if they're doing that, that means they can't be doing other important things that you've also asked them to do as per the work plan. So I would also want to add that for Phil, the autonomous bus at Dunloring It's cute, but it's too slow. It's only going at like 5 miles per hour, and a lot of drivers are complaining about that they can't pass the vehicle. And the pilot's going to be ending in, I think, August. And hopefully that will get extended because, of course, during COVID, they haven't gotten too many riders. But one comment that was made was that it helped people with disabilities. So hopefully that will, Fairfax County transit planners will give go ahead. Dominion Power is actually the ones paying for that vehicle. So it's up to them too.
All right. Well, okay. With respect to Barbara's point, I still back Denise's idea that members of the committee be able to view these floating bus stops where there have been problems. And so maybe at least if a bus could be arranged for us and it doesn't necessarily take staff, it obviously it would be helpful if one staffer were available, but if staff is not available, let us who are concerned about this issue at least being able to go out to floating bus stops, certainly the ones that have been problems. I still remember Charlie Crawford, and I know Patrick has picked up the banner on this, and I hate to disagree with you, Barbara, but I still think we should somehow be able to see for ourselves what the dangers are. Thank you. Anu, who's else is?
Chair Calabria, before we move on, I just want to state that anybody who would like to make any public comments going forward, they can send us an email at metroaacchair@vomada.com, or they can call and leave a message for us at 202-962-1100, and we will handle their concerns, questions accordingly. So that was my announcement for the public comments. Now moving along with the same topic, I see that Doris has her hand up. Doris, go ahead if you have any further questions or comments.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to mention to you that there are different models of the floating bus stops in the district than there are in Montgomery County. And so seeing the different models that are in use are going to be important to see. I mean, if they all were the same, that would be fine. Seeing one would be good. But it's important to look at what's being implemented in the different jurisdictions and decide if one of them works, if none of them works, and get feedback to the board. And using my background in physical therapy, one of the things I might suggest is having one of the board members go out and wear a blindfold or side blinders so they couldn't see 180 degrees and ask them how they feel about trying to get from the sidewalk to the bus through a bike path.
Boy, yeah, good point.
Go ahead, Carol.
Dr. Posner, one of the issues about this floating bus stops is that they're in jurisdictions. It's not WMATA that's putting these things together. It's right. Other people. So it's not a WMATA project per se. That might be a difficulty to get a board member to do that, but that's up to you, the committee.
Well, it affects board members and the public who are seniors or people with disabilities, and that's our concern. Now, I agree with Phil that there are different configurations of these floating bus stops, and some are less dangerous than others, but let's be able to see what the differences are and maybe recommend that those that are safer have features that we could urge another jurisdiction to consider. to improve theirs, but it's we members of the Accessibility Advisory Committee who are trying to be helpful to all seniors and all people with disabilities. So we should try and see the best and the better and those that are problems.
Yeah, I'd also point out that the members of the boards represent the different jurisdictions. And in most of the instances, they're also members of that region's Transportation Advisory Board. And so while this may not be a direct WMATA issue, they've got some power and they have some input at the large area and with the jurisdictions to give them input. So we're dealing with them as citizens, even though they may not be able to design the bus stops.
This is another question. Maybe we can videotape two or three of the AAC attempting to use the different locations. We could have someone, I can make arrangements that somebody pick up someone who wants to participate and we ride around to the different locations and videotape the fiasco.
Yeah, Denise, this is Barbara. I think that's a really great idea because you don't want a big crowd around when you're looking at it. You want to experience it as if you were traveling independently.
Well,
because the bikes are going to stop if they see a whole crowd, aren't they?
The bikes? Well, who knows?
Maybe not.
Okay. Doris, I believe you're trying to make some comment. Go ahead.
Okay, a couple of things. I think going out, I'm in agreement with Phil about going out and seeing things because conditions are different in different jurisdictions, and some jurisdictions out in Fairfax County or in Loudoun, when we get to that, do not make for necessarily a safe situation, and I lived in Montgomery County, so I get that. You know, the other thing is that with both the floating bus stop situation and the new payment systems and such on the buses, I agree with Deborah that it's imperative that we have travel training, and that might be extended in terms of the length of time that people can be in that training. But even more importantly, I think right now, since we're not sending people out, that it might be a good time to get the people who are on the street to doing travel training to help with the construction of a curriculum that will introduce people to all of these new ways of having to pay the bus and deal with these floating bus stops and all of that stuff. And I think now is the time to plan for it, particularly with regard to the payment system. And in light of that, I would like to request maybe that the staff of this, I mean, the chair of this committee consider putting that on putting what we're doing to train people or what we're trying to plan to do and the idea of a curriculum on an upcoming bus and rail committee meeting. That's my suggestion.
All right. Are there any other comments? Because we're down to 5:54 as far as I can see.
This is Carol Tino. If I may just answer a question you asked last time we met. Yes. It had to do with the ultraviolet light yes. test for bus yes. filtering systems. The ultraviolet C is the type that they will be testing, and they're also testing ultraviolet X.
Okay, well, that's good. As long as they at least have ultraviolet C, I think we're really better off. I don't know what the features are of ultraviolet X, but hopefully it will be as good or better.
By the way, ultraviolet C is also the same light that's being used to sanitize the handrails for escalators in our system.
Yes, I've seen the signs about that on the escalators. Well, thank you for the for following up and getting the last details on the ultraviolet germicidal filters for the trains and maybe for the future for the buses.
Actually, these are for the buses.
Oh, okay.
The testing is being done for the buses.
Yes. Well, I assume that the trains will have ultraviolet C. I know that they...
Yes, they will.
Yeah. Yes, okay. Very good. Thank you for following up. We've got just a few more minutes. Anyone else?
Afternoon. This is Bemore Glenn. I wanted to just do a quick follow-up in regards to Ms. Fisher and Mrs. Ray's comments about travel training and information that the travel trainers are using. There were some travel trainers that participated in the event last week for the bus validator piece and was really excited to see it and will be adding that to the information that they share with customers once we begin to return back to work. And so if the committee likes and is interested, we're more than happy to share what we share and what we propose to share as we're moving forward.
Excellent.
Thanks.
Please do that. Please do that. Inform us of what you propose to share.
Okay. Well, we'll work with the new on a date and when we're ready to share that information or when you all are ready to have us.
Right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you. That would be great.
Carol, we're to hear your, I think it's on July 21st and 22nd, something about the wayfinding. Could you?
Yes. That we're going to have, we're extending an invitation to test a wayfinding app called Waymap. And it will take place at Crystal City. And starting on July 21st and 22nd, available for the advisory committee members to participate or anyone who wishes to participate. And it's by appointment only. So please let Anu know if you're interested. I think Anu has already sent an email to the advisory committee. And it's going to be a one-to-one thing. There will be one person representing Waymap and talking to the person who wants to test it, the device, the app. They'll hand you a phone that already has the app in it, and then they will gauge your steps, and then you'll be able to travel through the bus bays at Crystal City Station from the station entrance. And just to see the benefits of traveling with this wayfinding app, I'm sorry.
Yeah. So it's only going to be at one place both days?
Yeah, it's only one place. It was specifically done so that WMATA could test it and see how it works.
How complicated is the station that is where? For example, I know that Silver Spring for me is complicated, and
this is just to basically start the discussion about this application and how it works, so that we can look into how it could work in other stations like Silver Spring. But this is not complicated. It's just a matter of either going up the escalator and going to the bus bay you want, or going up the elevator and crossing the street and going to the bus bay you want. It's just a simple example, but it would be wonderful if the advisory committee members or someone who would like to test test the app would participate, so that you could provide as much feedback as you'd like to see how that app could be improved, what worked for you, what didn't.
And we have to pre-register.
Yeah, you'd have to send an email to Anu and she will coordinate with.
It is now 6 o'clock, so I think we're required to adjourn. Any last things, or maybe some of you would want to linger after we adjourn, but we're required to adjourn at 6 o'clock, and so this meeting is adjourned. Thank you all, and if we don't see you before then, we'll see you next program year in September. Thank you.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you. Great job.
Thank you.
Thank you. Have a good summer.
Thank you.
Thank you. A new
app. Everybody.
Later on.
I'm sorry.
This is B. Anu.